Welcome to the College Audition Podcast with your host, nationally renowned college audition coach, Tim Evanicki.
Hey everybody, Tim Evanicki here with the College Audition, back with another episode of the College Audition Podcast. Today, my special guest is Miss Catherine Wagner, professor and chair of the Department of Theater Arts at Ithaca College. Welcome, Catherine.
Welcome, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's so great to have you here today. First thing I want to do is get to know you a little bit better. We always start by getting to know the guest first and the program second. So if you can give us a little bit of your background and your career that led you to your time at Ithaca, that would be great.
Great. Well, it always makes me proud to say my training began. I'm a BFA acting alum from Ithaca College. I graduated in 1985. So I came here really as a result of meeting an alum of Ithaca College who was working at a summer theater where I did one of those high school programs that you do over the summer, kind of like band camp. This was like theater intensive. You know, everyone does them now. Obviously, we do them. But I went to one, and there was a little Q&A with the professional actors, the equity actors that summer. And there was Larry Hirshhorn, who had just graduated with a BFA in acting, and he had a big Ithaca, you know, 76 or 77 jersey on. And I was just like, wow. And it's really far away from my high school. Like, I wanted to go to a college where there was no one from my high school. So Ithaca was like, ching-ching. So I ended up coming here. And so it's been great to be back as the chair. So it's been very meaningful for me.
Oh, how wonderful. As chair, you also teach some classes, of course. So what is it that you're actually responsible for teaching at the school?
I'm responsible for teaching, well, I'd like to say that I'm sort of the second baseman. I do whatever they need me to do, right? I'm the utility player as the chair, but I am aligned with the performance faculty. This semester, I am teaching intro to theater for non-majors because that professor retired at the end of the spring, so somebody had to pick up that ball. But usually I teach the junior year level of classical acting with heightened text. The class is called Styles One. We're changing that. We're blowing the cobwebs off of what we call our classes and diversifying and decolonizing the content of those classes. So what we're really learning is how actors apply the fundamental skills they learn in those first 2 years to the challenges of any kind of heightened text, whether it's August Wilson, Shakespeare, origin work, or devised work. So that's it. Wow. And I think I skipped the question about my career, so should I go back and cover
that? Would be great. We'd love to hear that. I didn't know if maybe that was all you wanted to share with us, and I wasn't going to pry, but...
No, I just realized why I really skipped right over that. But when I graduated from Ithaca College in 1985, I had no interest in going to New York City. I also had no interest in freelancing. I am come from a poor farm town in the middle of nowhere, so I wanted a full-time job that had health insurance. That was really important to me, so I moved to Chicago. And I started working with Second City in their training program. So I got a lot of work in improvisational groups in Chicago, which was a big thing, still is a big thing there now, and comedy improvisation as well. And I also started directing. And so I did a lot of those sort of late nights and readings and, you know, the things you do when you're a director because no one knows your work. And so then I determined that it was important for me to get an MFA in directing and that what I wanted from an MFA was experience. I wanted to have shows I could direct with actors and playwrights and designers, you know, for 3 years, which is why you want to go to graduate school. So building those connections and having experience where you don't have to get hired to be a director. And then at the end of that in 1990, I took a few years off, of course, and then I went back to graduate school. I got a job as the assistant to Des McAnuff at the La Jolla Playhouse. So I worked for someone who was at the top of his game in the 1990s, mm-hmm. had won the Tony for Big River and was working on things like, you know, Elmer Gantry and pre-production on Tommy. That was just pre-Tommy, but lots of really important work. And I was, you know, this green and, you know, 27 years old. So it was a great time for me to be working for someone who, you know, interacted with almost everyone in the American and Canadian theater. So that was exciting. And then I really determined that I wanted to take some time and teach. And I got my first teaching job at a small college in Vermont where I did everything. You know, I taught voice and movement, which there wasn't even a BFA program. You know, I just taught the classes that I knew that I could teach and really developed some skills and worked professionally. And then I got a terrific job at the Shakespeare Theater in Washington, D.C., starting a master's program in MFA in classical acting for Michael Kahn, who, of course, ran Juilliard for 30 years. And because my specialty had always been heightened text, when I was working at, in Minneapolis as a grad student, I went to University of Minnesota, I was at the Guthrie for 3 years. So as an intern, you know, third intern from the left, but I was in the room where it happened. Right. So I got to work with a lot of great people. So I had a resume that helped me get that job at the Shakespeare Theater. And then I worked, of course, in the Baltimore and DC market in equity acting and directing as well. And then I went to DePaul for 6 or 7 years and was head of acting, BFA acting there, and then came here as chair. So throughout the academic career, which was important to me as a human being, to have the life that I wanted to have, those choices that I made were really important. I also continued to work as an actor and a director. And I'll say that when I started working as a director, it's what made me a better actor. So my acting career, I wouldn't say took off, but it became more sustainable when I really understood what it was to be a part of something that was bigger than yourself, bigger than your character. So that was a big changing game changer for me, was being a director and working with directors and going, oh, this is about focus. This is about storytelling. This is not about, you know, my character. So that was really, that was an important juncture.
And how long have you been at Ithaca now?
I came here in 2013, so this is my 8th year.
Oh, wow. Now, you are the chair of the Department of Theater Arts, and then there's also a coordinator of musical theater. Are you over the BFA, or is there also a coordinator of BFA acting? I'm not sure I know that.
No, there's degree coordinators for tech and design, stage management, theater studies, theater arts management, acting, and musical theater. Okay. Those are degree coordinators, so they manage, you know, the advising, the course, you know, curriculum, things like that, and then the chair of the department really just looks at and helps support those programs. So we are a leadership team. We are not hierarchical in terms of decision making. So there's degree coordinators and faculty to every area.
I love that.
Yeah,
I love
performance
that.
Performance is acting and musical theater, blended. TP&D is technology and design and stage management blended. So it's, even though there's an acting coordinator and a musical theater coordinator, they're working together, running meetings together, establishing agendas together, meeting with students together. It's all peanut butter and jelly. You know?
And they share faculty at times. So you'll work with MT kids as well.
I don't know. Sometimes you don't know who they are, and who cares, right? They're in your acting class. It doesn't matter. We make sure that there's a blend of MTs and actors.
That's
so
great.
That you suddenly don't go, oh, I'm in a section with all MTs. Like, that would never happen. You know, the only difference is the MT majors have required music and required voice and many more required dance requirements. The acting students have no music requirements. Choices. Hello, it's a music school, right? I take voice lessons still and I pay for them,
right.
You know, but the options are available to both. It's just that they're required for the musical theater majors. So that's the only difference, is the requirements in music and dance are higher in dance and in music and voice. And the acting degree has all of the other components and more required classes in acting than the musical theater degree.
Okay. So great to hear, because whether you're MT or acting, everyone's a storyteller. So they should be at the same level in their acting classes. And I think that's wonderful.
Hello. And there's no, you know, there's some schools that say, oh yeah, we don't have a showcase for actors, just for MTs. It's like, well,
why?
MT students are doing scenes in the showcase and our acting majors are singing in the showcase. Like, you're a performer. You can be a musical theater performer no matter what your badge says, right? No matter what your degree says. So we try to demystify those separations. We blur those lines so that everybody works on their essence, not on only based on what your major is.
I always ask my guests to give me their elevator speech on their program. What, in your own words, can you describe your program and why should a student come to Ithaca?
Great. So say ding when my minute is up, right? Here it is. We train the whole artist. We train you to be a responsible, collaborative, innovative citizen of the theater and bring the change, bring the positive change, face the challenges, have the difficult conversations, and bring choices, bring who you are to the work, and also be transformative. That's really, that's us.
Well said. I didn't even have to ding the bell.
We're only going to the second floor.
Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit about BFA musical theater and BFA acting. So sort of walk us through, let's do BFA acting first. Walk us through the program, starting with freshman year. Talk us about, you know, performance opportunities and sort of give us an overview of what that path looks like for a BFA acting student at Ithaca.
Great. Well, the easy part is the older sister, big sister, BFA acting, and little brother, MT. The MT program was built on the shoulders of its big sister, the BFA acting program. So the fundamental coursework in studios, voice and movement, scene study, all of those courses are blended for both, for 2 years. And then the third year, the class that I teach right now, Styles 1 and other advanced classes, are shared by all of those majors. So the classes that you're in Monday, Wednesday, Friday, voice and movement, 2 hours long, 10-minute break, eat that power bar, get into scene study, 2 hours long, eat that power bar, go to Jazz 1, go to Ballet 1, right? That's the way it works. There's no differentiation between the acting program and the musical theater program. Those are the studio courses for all of them. Everyone also takes script analysis in their first semester, along with every other first-year theater major. They also take theater practicum, which is crew. So you can see that there's no sort of separation of those programs in the way that we believe the foundation should be built on the house. As a theater artist, and in the track for performance, which includes acting and musical theater, it is exactly the same. The only difference is, because the MT students have to have jazz and ballet in their first year, they're in jazz on Mondays and Wednesdays and ballet on Tuesdays and Thursdays. The acting majors have dance requirements, but they aren't prescribed. You just have a certain number of dance credits. So you could say, you know what, I'm gonna take tap. I'm gonna take tap, stage combat, maybe ballet one, and maybe a jazz one. Great, you don't have to take Jazz 1 your first semester, first year. Mm-hmm. You can take it another year. So there's a schedule, right, that you follow where when the acting students might be done and go to lunch, the MT students are done and go to lunch but have 35 minutes to get back and into jazz at 12:30 or 1 o'clock. And then they're free the rest of the afternoon to take their humanities class or their music class or they have a voice lesson, whereas the acting students are taking their humanities class or their writing intensive or, you know, so it's like you're still a college student, right? That's the idea. And then as you progress, the musical theater students are adding on to that basic materials, oral skills, sight singing. They're adding in keyboarding, if you don't have keyboarding, right? There's a test you have to take. Those are classes that are categorized as music for non-majors, meaning non-majors in the music school.
Right.
So the classes that the musical theater students take that are required, keyboarding one, keyboarding two, basic materials, fundamentals of musicianship, anyone can take those classes. Those are for non-music majors, but those are required classes for the musical theater major. So their sophomore year, those musical theater majors after voice and speech, movement, and scene study, also blended with the actors, they're taking a year of fundamentals of musicianship. Because not only do you need to be able to play the right hand, you need to be able to go, oh, I see what the accompaniment is doing under this. I'm gonna plunk it out on my left hand as well. So you're reading bass clef and treble clef. Those are learning outcomes that we have for musical theater majors around musicianship. In addition to basic materials and skills, also taking private lessons. All of those are open and available to the acting majors. They're just not required. So if there's someone who's into musical theater or wants to be a stronger musician, has stronger musicianship, wants that, or already has it perhaps, maybe they want to be a composer like Lin-Manuel, you know, good for them. They can take a composition class in classes for non-majors in the music school. So all of that is open. So what's exciting about the acting degree is that as the musical theater students are adding those extra, right, whipped cream and Jimmy's on top, the acting majors have advanced voice and speech, dialects for the stage, acting for the camera as requirements for their degree. Mm-hmm. Now, are there MTs in those classes? Of course there are. Every semester, there's three or four students that take dialects, but everyone learns how to do a dialect in sophomore voice and speech. Everyone learns how to do some camera work in the scene study classes because we do self-tapes, audition techniques, things like that. So you're learning a little bit, but every degree can't have everything. Mm-hmm. So the way that it works is those upper level acting classes, intro to musical theater performance, lots of dance class, Alexander technique, those are options that are primarily for acting majors. But it doesn't mean there isn't an MT that says, oh, I'm in acting for the camera every Friday, one semester. But it's not required for their major. So that's how it balances out. And then at the upper level, the musical theater students are taking a three-course sequence, rep and style, right, learning all the various styles and composers in musical theater, dance for the musical stage, which is a collaborative dance and musical theater history in a way, but really social dances and things like that, required. Are there acting majors in it who are dancers? Of course there are. you know, so it's very, it's like doors and windows, right? Like this is a door, this is a window, you know, mm-hmm. you can have a little bit of this and just go, you know what, as an acting major, I'm going to pick and choose the classes I want to take to be a better musical theater performer. And I'm going to take voice lessons or voice class. As a musical theater major, I'm going to say, you know what, I have a proficiency in dialects. In addition to learning the process of learning a dialect and voice and speech, I'm going to try to get into that dialects class. So those are things that are not required for everybody, but are required across the different majors.
Wow. It's
that's so blowing. That's like making your head explode, right?
I mean, it was a lot of information, but it was all right. I think I followed that. There's so many schools out there, and without naming any names, that, you know, they have a really strong musical theater program and then an acting program that's sort of, students may get redirected to acting. And I hate that because that makes it sound like the acting program is a consolation prize. Or on the other side of it, they might have a really strong acting program, but their musical theater program doesn't get a lot of love. And it sounds like at Ithaca, and I've always said this, that, you know, both your acting program and your musical theater program are very popular competitive programs, and that's probably because it sounds like they're pretty much treated as the same program, just with a little extra icing on top or decoration on top, depending
right.
upon which
and
track
the decoration
you're on.
Is about foundational skills in music,
yeah,
and requirements in dance. That's really what it's about. So I think students are always going to have cultural and social ways of saying, you know, my major is better than your major. You know, that's seventh grade all over again, right? We
right.
can't stop people from saying anything. But the truth is, in our program, I didn't talk about it earlier, but the production opportunities are exactly the same. Anyone on Ithaca College's campus can audition for the musical. The musical theater students are required to do it. The right. musical theater majors are required to audition for the plays. The acting majors are required to audition for the plays, but they can opt in to the musicals because we don't have a musical theater requirement or course that says we're training you to do this, so that's why you have to audition. Dance concert, everybody has to audition for the dance concert, required for performance majors, because both degrees have dance courses and dance requirements. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where the rubber meets the road. Do mm-hmm. we set you up for success? Do we set you up to know how to do this? And do we give you opportunities to practice? That's mm-hmm. what it's about, acting or musical theater. A musical theater major doesn't get to say, oh, I only want to be in musicals. Guess what? That's one of the attributes of this program, is you can be in the play.
Right.
One of the attributes of acting is you can also be in the musicals. So Ben DeMarco graduated 2 years ago. He played Tata in Ragtime. He's an acting major.
Yeah.
Nobody went, oh, why does an acting major get the lead in the musical? It's like, well, because that's how we cast the
right.
show. You know, like,
yeah.
So there's no, like I said, the badges, you know, there's
right.
no badges there.
So you said that all of the performance opportunities are open to auditions for anyone on campus. So have you ever had a time where the science major strolled in and wowed you and snagged a role?
Well, I don't know about snagging a leading role, but sometimes the science majors don't understand what they're getting into, and then they realize the rehearsal schedule and the costume fittings and the coaching,
right.
and they're like, oh, I just wanted to be in the play. It's like, well, this is the big leagues now.
Right.
But you know, Tim, what I see is the dance concert auditions. When I go to a dance call, which I'm not a dancer, I'm a mover. Mover is a loose term for what I am. But I like to watch the dance calls because I learn a lot. So I'll go and watch, and I'll say, who are these people? And they're PT majors, they're anthropology majors, and they love dance, and they want it to be a part of their lives. So every other year, and we have dance minor, you know, we have our dance classes are open. Obviously, they are restricted to MT majors first, and then to acting mm-hmm. majors, and then to theater majors, and then to other majors. So often I'll go into dance comp, or dance history, or dance for the musical stage, and I'll be like, who's that person? And they'll say, oh, that's a vocal performance major. And they're an incredible dancer, or they're a dancer who wants to be a better dancer. So there's a great openness that's not sort of closed doors. Of course, programmatically, it's a BFA, so we're not letting anyone into the classes, but the productions are open. So often where you're going to see people featured is in the dance concert. But often you'll see people that are not performance majors in roles and in ensembles in all of our shows. So I think that's a wonderful thing about Ithaca College, is you don't have to be a performance major or a theater major to be on a crew or in a show.
Yeah, so something that I sometimes hear from students that hear that the shows are open to the entire campus is they're like, oh, I'm not sure I want to do that because then, you know, the shows aren't going to be as good or something like that. So what do you have to say to that?
Very few outside folks audition for the for them. The important thing is we're open.
Right.
We're inclusive. So if there's someone in the Park School that's a screenwriter that wants to audition for the playwriting ensemble, they don't have to audition for the musical. They can just say, you know what, I want to work with the new playwrights. I'd like to just audition for that. Of course we're going to let them do that. Of course we're going to consider that. So for me, it's not like, oh, it's open. It's like community theater. Anyone can be in it and the show's not going to be good. Like, that's not true.
I think that's sometimes what the... that's sometimes what the students think. And I always say, you know what? If you're there as a BFA musical theater kid and you're not beating out these science kids for the leads, then maybe there's something else you should be concerned about.
You are not going to find someone playing a lead that's a non-major, that's not an entity already involved in the department. It's not about who, right? It's about what you bring. But no, we are here to serve our majors and make sure that they get the opportunities they need.
So how many plays and musicals do you produce a year?
I would say the average is anywhere from 6 to 10. We do 2 musicals, 2 to 3 plays, a dance concert, and an opera, and then 2 to 4 studio shows, which just happen in a smaller venue. So we have to limit the cast size. We can't do Execution of Justice with 25 people because there'd only be 10 people in the audience. So we do Last 5 Years, Adam and Eve, Tatiana in Color. We're doing Proof. Smaller cast shows, Skeleton Crew, and plays that are important but that can't be done. Like, we would never do Glass Menagerie or Skeleton Crew on a 500-seat stage.
Right.
More students need those opportunities. So we also think it's important for students to work in different venues. You need to know what it's like to work in a space that has 45 seats. It's a very different demand than a space that has 500 mm-hmm. seats and no microphones, or 500 seats and microphones and 280 seats. So we just make sure that pedagogically students feel like they're getting a bit of a rotation, and that it's like, oh, I've done 2 studio shows. That doesn't mean they're not main stage. They're still main stage shows. You still get credit for them, and you still have to audition for them with all the other cast at the beginning of the semester. But it's just that you're in different venues.
So you mentioned an opera and a dance concert. Is that under your department as well?
Mm-hmm. Yep. The opera is in collaboration with the music school, as of course is our musical, pit musicians from the music school, so that we're training those people as well. Plus, we get to meet and grow as people for interacting with musicians. And the dance concert is theater. That's our department. We don't have a dance major. We have a dance minor, but we do a dance concert every other year. And in the years we don't do a dance concert, the dance comp class, the choreography class, does a site-specific dance concert that's just a sharing, a one-time sharing. And every semester we do a dance sharing so that the classes show what they're working on. But in the site-specific years when we don't have the dance concert, you'll see students out on the practice field doing their ballet, doing the ballet composition. So there's always dance going on.
I love that everyone just plays in the sandbox together there. I had no idea that the opera and dance was sort of under the same umbrella. I mean, as a Juilliard grad that's now a musical theater dork, that's awesome. I always tell my MT kids that, you know, do an opera once in your life. Do an operetta if it scares you. But that's really great. That's awesome.
Well, we've had even 4 acting students in the last 2 years. We did The Old Maid and the Thief, which has a non-speaking role of a mute, a person who's in the household but can't speak. And they had, because it was a double cast, obviously operas often double cast so that the voices can have a night of rest, but also so more people can play the roles. They cast 2 of our majors, an acting major and an MT major, who played this incredibly challenging acting role, and they alternated nights. And then Semele had 4 non-speaking, non-singing roles, and they just had open auditions, and 4 acting majors ended up doing that. So they got a great experience working with a professional opera director, being in an opera. So, you know, hello, performance opportunities, knock, knock.
Incredible.
You know, why rule anything out? So,
incredible. So it sounds like this program is pretty intense. Do students have the opportunity to minor in other things, or do you allow a double major with a BFA?
Well, a double major with a BFA,
of course.
Here's what I'm going to say. It's not about not allowing it. It's that you can't do it in 4 years. I mean, right. You go to a buffet, they give you a plate. How much food can you put on that plate, right? So, you know, you want a little of everything, but you also say, hey, if I'm a BFA acting major, I've got a little more room and I can do a minor. If I want to do a double major, I might have to take one of those classes over the summer, or I might not go to London, right? London, our study abroad is embedded in the junior year. We call it baked in study abroad. But I was a politics minor and I didn't go to London, and I got everything done except the last 2 upper level classes in politics And it's because they conflicted with dialects and stage combat. And it's like, well, those are for my major. So I never finished my politics minor. Who cares, right? I still consider myself a politics minor. But I took two other credits. I took a language class and an education class, which I'm really grateful I took, to round out my liberal arts requirements instead of the minor. So I think students come in saying, well, I'm going to double major. It's like, calm down. You're a BFA. You've got 95 required credits. Just eat what's on your plate. And when you can start putting dessert on, knock yourself out, right? Go for it. But you can't just suddenly become a psych minor or a psych double major and have to take 36 credits. Like, that's 12 classes. It doesn't fit on the plate. So I want to be realistic about those expectations. If you want a double major, you can't, most programs can't have that BFA as a double major because it's got so many requirements, right? You're all the way through to the third floor, right? All you've got left is the attic, right? But if you're a BA at Oberlin or Carleton, wow, you can be all kinds of double majors because your major only requires 30 or 40 credits.
Right.
So out of your 120, I mean, people just don't do the math. They just see, you know, it's like walking in a candy store and say, I want to get everything I can. Well, you can, but you don't have to be a minor to do those things.
Right.
You can say, I'm going to take a language class, a visual arts class, an anthropology class. Good for you. You don't have to minor in anthropology. So yes. I just think folks have a sense of, I want as much as I can get. Remember, there are dance and music requirements for the musical theater major. So those are practically minors already. Just a couple more classes and they can have it count as a minor.
And sometimes it's also the parents that, you know, want that backup plan, quote unquote, that just, I send shivers down my spine when I hear those words. But here's what I always end up saying to the parents, like, okay, great. You're allowing them to BFA musical theater as long as they minor in something that can be a backup plan. So they're going to minor in psychology. I'm like, do you actually think if musical theater doesn't work out for your child that they're going to just become a psychologist with a minor in psychology?
Here's my substitute, right? We're substituting a lot of language right now. I'm going to substitute the backup plan with the words transferable skills.
Yes.
That's the backup plan. Any musical theater degree, any acting degree, any design degree, I don't care if you're majoring in props, guess what your transferable skills are? Collaboration. Right? Inclusiveness, sharing and being a part of something, meeting deadlines, working under pressure, learning resilience and how to take feedback and incorporate it, and how to develop the soft skills to be a part of a community. You don't get that with a business degree. You don't get that with a psychology minor. So being a part of theater is saying, I'm going to end up being an entertainment lawyer. I'm going to end up being a casting director. We have an acting student who now runs a SoulCycle franchise in Seattle. And when they first moved to New York, they were miserable because it wasn't the life that they wanted. They didn't have the things they wanted, so they went to SoulCycle as a customer and they said, the best part of my day right now is the 45 minutes that I'm in that studio. And then they became a certified teacher. And then the manager said, we'd like to hire you. And then they said, we have an opportunity opening up in Seattle. Would you like the management position there? And now they are owner of a franchise. And they are happier than they've ever been.
Yeah.
And they will say to me, I couldn't have done any of the things I did as a manager if I hadn't been in stage management class, working on a crew, being in a theater, and performing in front of others.
Yeah.
So you never know where your path will lead. And right now, parents and young people have a very narrow hallway, a very narrow view of what they think they will do and what they think they want to do. Mm-hmm. And it will all change. And you can't say that to a young person today. You just have to say, great for you. This is the thing. It is not Broadway or bust, right? It's about an industry. It's about an ever-changing industry. So building those skills and building the place where those skills live, which is who you are as a person. That's what a college degree is for, not for a little brand, a little stamp that says musical theater or acting. So that's the big picture. And if you step back and look at that and say, someone who ends up having children and becoming a third grade teacher and still loves theater and is involved in it in many ways, that is not a measure the ways we measure success are more than success in the industry, in a role, or in a particular segment of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
It's what is your, are you happy?
Exactly. Yeah. When I, you know, when I was at Juilliard, college audition coaching wasn't even a thing. My career didn't exist, and I decided when I was still at Juilliard that I wanted to work with kids, and more than, you know, do the auditions and all of that stuff, and I've made my whole adult career as that. And I tell that to my students all the time, is that your degree is your backup plan. In fact, I wrote a blog post about that a year ago or so, and I remember that was the most shared blog post ever that I ever had, and it was a bit of a rant because I was saying I have all these students that second year they take a playwriting class as an elective and fall in love with playwriting, and then that's the path they take, or a costuming class, and that's the path they take, and going to college is about becoming a functioning adult human being just as much as it is becoming a better performer. So I love to hear that. And I love to hear about your soul cycle student that is happy and using the skills that they learned there. So
yeah. And perfect. You know, so many performers, Tim, are certified yoga, Pilates instructors, massage therapists. Mm-hmm. They're finding ways to say, I'm going to turn the shingle around as an actor and open for business, but I've got this other shingle too, and it's going to sustain me, and it's going to give me the saving for retirement. It's going to give me travel. It's going to give me opportunities. So if I book a Spamalot international tour for 3 years, good for you, right? You can get rid of your apartment. But I also feel like I worked at Arena Stage in DC, and one of my co-actors was always ventilating mustaches or ventilating wigs. And I was like, what is that? And she said, oh, I took a 6-week certification class in wig ventilation and facial hair. And I do this for every opera company, and I get paid, you know, $48.50 an hour, and I do it. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to do that. I'm totally going to do that.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So there are so many ways. Yeah. Scenic art. So many ways that you can be involved in the industry as a side gig, right?
Right.
As a side gig, and say, these are the ways that I sustain myself, and there's my freelance. Mm-hmm. But I'm not letting my health insurance rely on my freelance. So, you know, that's also why a lot of people adjunct, or they're teaching artists, and they say, this is one of the, I mean, you're a teacher, Tim, that's what you are. You're a teacher. You're not a coach. You're a teacher and a coach and a supporter and a therapist and a, you know, you name it. But the truth is, those industries are just like, they're like seeds in the garden that you plant. Mm-hmm. And you only have the skills and the clientele you have because of what you bring. And that's what students need to know as a college student is, you've got to develop who you are, which is what's going to help you make sure that path is open to you. And I say the same to parents. You know, of course, this is their dream right now, right? But the truth is, we're not crushing your dream by saying, hey, the reality of the business is, you know, you have to work really hard if you want to do this. But you also have to find other things that make you happy and bring you a source of comfort and joy. Not your employment status or whether you have a child or whether you're in a relationship. You have to, I call them buckets of happiness. You need a lot of ways that you get happy. So if something goes south, you've got somewhere else to go. You've got something else to lean on. It is not about a backup plan. It's about having another bottle of water in the fridge. You know, like how else can I hydrate my soul and myself through the things that I bring?
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned briefly about your Baked-In Study Abroad program. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I know that that is something that a lot of students are looking for when they're looking at colleges.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I think is great is, you know, getting lost on public transportation in a country where you don't speak the language is a life lesson. Learning when you get off, I mean, nowadays it doesn't happen as much, but when you get off a train and nothing is in English, that's an opportunity. And when you explore food and culture in places where you are not the dominant race or the dominant ethnicity, you learn a lot about what other people have dealt with and how they've managed that. And so we believe that study abroad is a critical experience, an opportunity, right? You don't have to do it. But building it into the junior year for acting majors in the fall, for MT majors in the spring, that's just so we don't gut the whole junior class, right? Everybody doesn't go in the fall. But it's also because requirements line up that way. So acting majors take requirements back when they get back. But that London program is baked in with a writing intensive, a movement class, a voice lesson, immersions, Shakespeare, drama lit, British art and architecture, all things you can use as progress towards your degree. So it's not a semester off, which is what I think a lot of programs think study abroad is. And they say, oh, we don't have study abroad. You can't be without a voice lesson. It's like, we have a voice teacher. Now, it's not your personal voice teacher from across the street here at Whalen at the music school. But guess what? You're going to work with a lot of different approaches. So we have a terrific voice teacher and accompanist in London. And of course, the acting majors can also take that class and take lessons and have that class. So Immersions is a play seeing, writing, and discussing class. It solves the writing intensive, and it also counts as one of your drama lit requirements. But you're seeing shows 2, 3, sometimes 4 nights a week while you're in London. It's also a semester break from production. You're not doing production. You're not in a show. You know, you're being a person. You're being a world citizen. And classes are Monday through Thursday right now. They're probably going to go to Friday at noon coming up, so that you have more chance to travel. Obviously, this year it's going to be a little bit challenging, restrictions, and I'm sure folks are going to be vaccinated. But having that ability to say, you know what, I'm going to go to Belgium. You know what, spring break, we're going to go to Italy, or we're going to go to Africa, or, you know, we're going to find ways to do the things we want to do while we're over there. So those experiences of being away from home, right, putting down your phone, right, looking out the window, and really having something else be part of your experience, mm-hmm. rather than that sort of, this is what I know, this is what I eat, this is who I am, right? Really opening up your world. There are students that, I mean, they come back, but they go back to London. Right. They get married, they go to law school there. We've got 2 students in grad school now in London. They said, I loved it here, right? So, you know, there's great opportunities there, and London is the baked-in version. There's also an LA version for Park students, our communication school, and a couple of acting majors will say, oh, I want to do the LA semester, but we don't teach drama lit in LA. So they have to make sure they get their requirements lined up, because they're going to take other classes in LA. They might do an internship at a casting director, but it's not going to count towards certain requirements. So mm-hmm. you just have to be organized.
Yeah. Can you share with us some notable names that students might recognize, either faculty or alum?
Well, Courtney Young, one of our musical theater faculty, was associate choreographer and worked on Broadway for 15, yeah. 20 years before she went to get an MFA in directing at Penn State. And she's on our faculty, and she has worked on, I mean, you can IBDB yep. Courtney Young and see that she's been involved in The Producers, Young Frankenstein, mm-hmm. Has worked for Robert Longbottom, worked on the new, most recent The Sting with Harry Connick Jr., brought students into those rehearsals when our seniors were in New York. I remember one student saying, wow, nobody picked up their phone for 3.5 hours. Like, everyone is focused, everyone is prepared, really learning from folks in the profession. All of our faculty continue to work professionally, which is exciting.
That's so important.
Q Smith, Come From Away, she's going to be in the film for that as well. Cesar Semayoa, also another alum that's in Come From Away, that's going to be part of the movie. Devario Simmons, our costume director, was the associate costume designer on Come From Away. So, of course, he's working on the film as well. And I said, Q Smith is on maternity leave. You better get her in the movie. He said, yeah, we're not doing the movie without Q. Like, there's no way that movie's happening without Q.
I can't wait for that movie.
But obviously, our stalwart alums that most people know, in addition to Q and Cesar Semayoa, Eric Jordan Young, part of the original Broadway cast of Ragtime, as well as the revival directed by Marsha Milgram Dodge when he played Booker T. We hired Eric back to direct our Ragtime. So he's working in Vegas now, which is great. He tells people about what it's like to be in Vegas. He does a Sammy Davis Jr. Show, because he's aligned there artistically with Sammy Davis Jr. So Aaron Tveit, just about to collect his Tony for Moulin Rouge. Mm-hmm. Also, Carrie Butler, the great Carrie Butler, who gives back every year. So does Jeremy Jordan, Aaron, Ben Fankhauser, a lot of folks that do what we call field studies, which is alumni giving back and doing a working session with students, master classes. We call them expert classes now instead of master classes. So they do expert sessions. Mark Redanti, Bauman Redanti and Shawl, David Shawl, his LA counterpart, running a boutique agency. So lots of folks that are in the industry that support, not just because they're famous and they're performers. So what's wonderful is Larry Hirshhorn, who I learned about Ithaca from, Tony Award-winning producer of Vanya, Sasha, Masha and Spike, and Gentleman's Guide, and you know, so many great producers, directors, designers that are Ithaca College alums. CCH Pounder is one of our alums from the 70s, Gavin McLeod from the 1970s. So lots of folks from way back. Amanda Naughton, acting, was in Fun Home, the national tour of Fun Home. So lots of great folks that are working, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of others that are stage managers, designers, directors, performers, you name it.
Awesome. Ithaca is one of the most beautiful areas in the Northeast. I have to say, it's just stunning. Just driving to the campus is beautiful, and I sort of grew up in the area, and Ithaca is quite literally a shining city on a hill, on a very big hill. we used to say that the Ithaca students all had Ithacavs. Is that something that people still say? Because you're constantly walking up and down the side of a hill, so we called them Ithacavs. Is that? No,
wow.
I'm crazy.
Well, now there is a great walking path, which is really
nice. Okay.
You have to dangerously walk on the side of the road. But I think that the town is a really important part of the culture of the school. I mm-hmm. say, you know, the college is like a postage stamp on top of the hill, but you know, deer cross the street, ducks cross the street on campus. It's a small town, but it's a college town. The industry mm-hmm. of Ithaca, New York, is education. You know, if you've heard of Cornell University, you know, mm-hmm. it's a great place to go to college. Mm-hmm. The distractions that you might find in big cities, I call them shiny balloons, right? If you're at a school in Manhattan or Boston or somewhere, there might be auditions all the time. And, you know, you're kind of skipping out of class because there's a shiny balloon. And I think it's not that our students don't take professional opportunities if they happen for them, you know, good for them. They want to finish their college education. But I think it's also great to come somewhere and be able to focus. And to really say, I'm here to get a college degree. This is what I decided I wanted to do. And I get conservatory training. Mm-hmm. So what's wonderful is on the weekends, you go out and walk a gorge. You do a rim trail or a gorge trail. You go to the Finger Lakes. You know, you're able to be a part of nature and to see that the world has so much more to offer than this tiny little thing that seems so very important right now. Mm-hmm. So I think it's also what nature gives us is perspective. And large bodies of water and landscape provide perspective. So especially in contrast to the perspective of looking at a phone.
Right.
So I think it's really important for people to be somewhere where they're going to get something else.
Yeah.
And they're going to find something.
Yeah. It's beautiful. The dorms there too have this amazing view of a lake. And I mean, it's just such a beautiful place to be. And the town is actually, because it's a college town, there's a lot to do as far as restaurants and things down in, is it Ithaca Commons? Is it
Ithaca
called?
Commons, Ithaca yep. Commons. Live music, all kinds of performance opportunities, summer theaters, year-long theaters. All of our students work professionally at those theaters through their time here. And I always tell people, boy, you got to find a time, either sophomore summer or junior summer. Mm-hmm. You got to stay in town over the summer. Get a job, mm-hmm. you know, work at Purity Ice Cream, work at the Hangar, you know, do something, teach in our summer camp, you know, for, mm-hmm. for kids. Do something so that you can see what it's like to be here, you know, on the 3 or 4 days when it's not snowing.
And the Hangar is a professional theater in the and they do the... there's a musicals festival every summer.
That's Merry-Go-Round.
Oh, that's Merry-Go-Round.
Merry-Go-Round up in Auburn, where most of our faculty and students work at all of these theaters over the summer and throughout the year. So the Hangar is summer mostly and has been doing Christmas Carol and lots of great programming during the year. The Kitchen is year-round programming,
Kitchen.
Not in the summer. Courtland Rep is right around the corner. Kirby Thompson auditions all of our students every year. The Rev does blocks for our students and all the neighboring schools. So we get blocks of 33 students or 34 students. I audition for them every year. You know, it's just, it's a great community. And there's also a lot of terrific communication. So an artistic director will call me and say, we're trying to make this play happen. We'd love to use a student. And they'll say, could you think of a few? And I say, oh, no, you're going to have an open call.
Good for you.
Like, we're not going to give you names. You're going to have an open call. And then you call me and say, okay, these are the 5 I'm calling back. And then I'm happy to say, couldn't have picked a better 5 students. Any of them are going to be golden. Or I'll say, yeah, you know, there's some issues there with some of them. They deserve an opportunity, you know.
Right.
Sometimes the way people behave at school is very different than the way they behave when they're in profession, which is too bad. But, you know, there are many ways people learn the lessons of best practices and how to treat everybody with respect. Mm-hmm. So those values underlie everything we try to build. Right. And we all learn lessons and make mistakes. Boy, I know I sure did.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of auditions, this is a great segue into the final portion of our chat today. Let's chat a little bit about auditioning for Ithaca College. That, I think, is the reason why most students listen to this podcast. So let's just start with some numbers. How many applications or pre-screens do you see each year?
Well, for the performance degrees, we usually see about 1,600 or 1,800. We get about 20, this year we had 2,100 applications to the department, and that's stage management, design tech, theater management, BA theater studies, and performance. But we typically see 600 or 700 for acting and about 1,000, over 1,000 for MT. Those are pre-screens. We have no quota. We don't have any limit. If we want to do more auditions, we just create more slots and open up a different room and get two more faculty and an accompanist in there and do more auditions. So we don't say we can only see 400 students or we're only going to look at so many. We believe when we look at your pre-screen, what we're looking for, we say, great, we're advancing that person. The question we ask at the end of a pre-screen is, do I want to see that person in the room? Do I want two of my other colleagues, right? Two of us at least see the pre-screens. So we call it green lighting. So if I'm looking at Tim's pre-screen and I say, oh, what a healthy, strong, expressive instrument, right? Musical theater student. And, oh my God, look at the acting chops. There's a connection. There's an other. It's appropriate material. Oh, and they did a wild card where they're playing hockey or they're, you know, doing something that you see who else they are, right? What a wonderful person. Yes, we want to see them in the room, right? Doesn't take me long to do that. If I say no, right? If I say, ooh, not a healthy expressive instrument, really struggling meeting pitch, not playing with the accompaniment at all, that's going to be a no-go for musical theater. If they've checked the box that says, hey, if I don't get pre-screened in for musical theater, can I be considered for acting? If they've checked that box, I look at those monologues. I look at those monologues anyway, because everybody thinks they want to be musical theater, but it's like, you know what? You've got great acting chops. You should consider the acting degree. So I'm going to look at those monologues and go, okay, advance, but not for musical theater. Invite to audition for acting. Totally your choice, no extra charge. We are not going to see you for musical theater. Mm-hmm. Would you like to leverage the fact that we have a great musical theater program and audition for the acting program? Good for you. You might say costume design. You might say theater studies. You might say playwriting. We're going to invite you to interview for that program at no additional charge and say, hey, you paid once because you wanted to be an MT. We're not pre-screening you in as an MT, but we see you're interested in theater arts management. You want to be an agent. Great. You're going to interview for that program now. Well, it happens, right? It just happens. So what we're really looking for in those pre-screens is potential and some sort of understanding of the basic human connection, right? When people say, what do you look for in an audition? I say two words, inner life. Mm-hmm. Inner life. Are they performing their audition or are they actually inhabiting the material? Some folks have lots of coaches. I'm sure you know, Tim, there are coaches that coach the students within an inch of their lives. So nothing is actually happening when they're in the room, right? And when I say, if you walked into our virtual audition this year and you say, and before you can start your slate, I say, Tim, it's great to see you. What are you going to sing for us today? And the response is, hi, my name is Tim Evanicki. I'm going to be singing blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, hi, sorry. I said, hey, what are you going to sing for us today? If you walk in, I say, hey, Tim, nice to see you. What are you going to sing for us today? And you say, oh, I'm going to sing Joanna from Sweeney Todd, and I'm calm, right? from Forum. We love seeing who you are as a person. We don't want to see who you are as an audition machine.
Right. The slates. I'm so glad you said that. I tell all of my students, I'm like, there's no such thing. You slate on a video audition. You don't slate in the room. Have a conversation with the people.
Right.
So glad you said that.
And a slate is also saying, hi, I'm Catherine Widener. Right. My first piece is Madame Fräulein Schneider from Cabaret, and my second piece is Mrs. Levitt from Sweeney Todd. Mm-hmm. That's my slate. I'm still a person.
It doesn't have to be a rehearsed speech.
Exactly.
Okay. I'm so happy you said that.
Is what we want to see. Mm-hmm. So that if I say no to you, someone else is actually going to look at your pre-screen.
Mm.
And if that disagreement is there, if there's a green light and a red light, someone else is going to take a look at it.
Oh, well, that's
good. So that's
good.
How we do it. Yeah, because it could be somebody's 11 o'clock at night, right? And they're just like,
Right.
Like, we don't do that. We call it double greens or, double reds. It's like that person has been said no to twice. That's it. And then they'll say, can I get some feedback? And it's hard because we can't give 800 people feedback. Right. But people, the universe will send you a message is what I would say. If you're going to do 15 pre-screens and you get 12 of them advanced, the universe is sending you a message. Mm-hmm. If you get one advanced and it's a program that you know sort of lets in a lot of people, you probably need to think about what else you might want to do. Mm-hmm. And now might be a great time to start adjusting that dial.
Right, yeah. Right. So you said you don't have a quota, but how many live auditions did you see this year versus last year?
Well, this year we had a lot of auditions this year. So we had 2,100 applicants, so well over 1,400 for the performance program. So we saw about 700, I think. And wow. I would say in any given year, we see 200 to 300 for acting and 400 to 500, sometimes 600 for musical theater. So we see a lot of people because we think there's a lot of great potential. And we also think you don't have to have had a coach. You may not even have had an acting class, but boy, do we see your potential. And we'll just write, ooh, you know, just like at the very beginning of being a dancer, right? Or, ooh, really a natural actor, very instinctive. Who cares if there's training on the resume? Yeah. People say to me, what stands out on a resume? I say, your audition.
Exactly.
That's what stands out on your resume is your audition. If I'm interested in you, I'm going to go, I wonder what their background is like. When I see that there's not much there, I go, what an interesting actor.
Even more exciting.
What's on your resume, yeah.
Yeah, even more exciting when it doesn't matter how many shows they've done. And I have to drive that home every year. Don't break your back doing 30 shows in high school because it just doesn't matter. And you're not really learning a whole lot when you're doing a show versus really focusing on your training. So that's really great to hear. And then
Courtney sometimes will say it when we're in Unified. She'll say, what do you do besides this?
Right.
You know, what do you do that matters to you as much as this? And when they say nothing, it's like, interesting. Or when they say, oh, I'm a volunteer for kids with special needs. I bake lollipops every Saturday and I sell them to raise money at the farmer's market. Right. We're like, okay, we want to know more about that. Like, how did you get into that?
Yeah.
Oh, one of my siblings has special needs, has Down syndrome. How has that impacted you? Oh, it's really, it's a gift. I mean, like all of a sudden we're learning about this person.
Right.
So it's really important that it's not about having a 6-page resume with a million things on it. It's about being present in the room and sharing who you are.
And that conversation is probably what gets the student accepted just as much as how well they sang and did their monologues and did in the dance call.
We write the notes at the bottom of the sheet when we used to have sheets, right? Now it's all on the internet, but we used to write down, we just want this person in the room. We want this person in the classroom. We want that person to be a part of a class. We do a group warm-up. We do an exercise usually that's got a couple of rules just to see how people manage it. And if there's somebody who goes, well, I'm sorry, so what you want us to do, it's like, just cross the room. We're just going to cross the room. It's like we see where you are in terms of your availability and your willingness to learn in front of other people.
Right. So you do your live auditions on campus and at Unifieds. Are you anywhere else?
Well, 2 years ago, we were doing auditions in Atlanta. Last year, we had hoped to do that, but of course, it got canceled. We're really encouraging Unifieds to do something in Texas or Atlanta or New Orleans or somewhere where it will help. But actually, the accessibility that we gained through these Zoom remote auditions, we're never letting that go.
Oh, good.
There's no reason that anyone, we are always going to do at least 2 or 3 virtual sessions, one in December, one in January, one in February. So if you say, you know what, I can't afford to go to Chicago, I can't afford to go to New York, why should you? Mm-hmm. We can do it live. I mean, all we need is a click track for your music. You know, that's all we need. So it's really just about making sure that we can be in the room with you, right? Which might mean in the Zoom with you. So we're going to hold on to that and make sure that that's an important part of that accessibility piece that says, you know, and you get to audition from home. You get to be, you know, in your basement or your garage or your living room. We had someone who had their parent or their piano teacher just off camera playing live for them, which was great. You know, so people make it work, but we're not going to let that go.
Good. You anticipated my next question about the virtual audition. No, that's great. I'm glad you did. And we have auditions here in Florida that I actually host. We didn't do it this last year because we don't charge the students or the schools to participate. And we don't even set it up. The students audition directly or apply directly to the school. It's set up just like Unifieds. So maybe I'll chat with you a little bit about coming and doing our Florida ones in January. It's warm weather Unifieds.
I came down to Dreyfus a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. I had a great session with Michelle Petrucci and the great program she has.
Love her.
There. And I just focused on being in the room. I didn't coach anybody's monologues. I didn't give anybody an advantage. I just talked about the things we're just talking about now, and every single student had the opportunity to say, hi, I'm Catherine. My first piece is from this. My second piece is from this. And then we worked their transition. They started their song, and I said, okay, hold, please, next person.
Love
you know,
it.
Like just to practice. So we really want to make sure that we're reaching out to schools and to areas where you might not get the kind of support that you give. So absolutely, we're open to making things as accessible as possible. Cost and financial matters should never be a barrier to applying, auditioning, or attending.
Right.
And that is a long road to hoe, Tim. We are doing all we can, but boy, you know, college is expensive and it is really challenging, you know. I really appreciated that Joe Biden wanted to say, let's make community colleges tuition free. You know, things like that where you just think, what are we going to do to change things so that more people can have access to education? And then how can we make that transfer to say, how can we have more access to training?
Right. So what is your target size for classes, for incoming classes for acting and musical theater?
Yeah, so our goal is usually 16 to 18 for each degree. So okay. if we have 16 acting, 16 musical theater, that's 32. Mm-hmm. We're going to have scene study classes that are broken into threes. 10 or 12 students in a class, in an acting class. Mm-hmm. 16 in a voice and movement class, right? In a dance class. Perfectly fine to have 16 or 18 students. Mm-hmm. We're learning a lot of lessons. You're learning the phonetic alphabet. You're learning how the voice works. You're learning about vibrations, you know, your jaw, you know. That can be done in a room with 12 or 16 mm-hmm. or 18 people. And so 16 to 18, sometimes it's more, sometimes it's a little less. So 1 year we might have 18 MTs and 16 acting. 1 year we might have 20 acting and 16 MTs. We always have 16 MTs because we have a wait list. So if we end up going over, it's just because more people say yes. But if we're under on musical theater, we would go to the wait list by voice type.
So let's chat about that for real quick, because everyone handles their wait list slightly differently. And I think we've learned, certainly the listeners have learned from the past few episodes that we've recorded, that the rules for the wait list are there are no rules. It's sort of by need. How would you determine who's next up? You get a no from an offer that you've made. How do you determine who's next up that goes into that spot?
Oh, interesting. Well, first of all, we make what's called a waitlist offer to everyone that we feel we would admit, but they are not the top, let's say, 25 or 30 that we're going to make offers to. We get about a 50 or 55% yield on our offers. So if we want 16 students of admitting students, right, people that are going to pay and come here, we're only going to let out about 32 or 36 offers because we're going to get about 50% of them. They're going to go to Juilliard, they're going to go to CCM, they're going to go to Carnegie Mellon or Baldwin Wallace or Michigan, all these great programs, right? Whatever's mm-hmm. right for you. So what we do is we make those admit offers by voice type, right? 5 or 6 sopranos, 4 or 5 mezzos, if we have a couple of altos, some bass baritones, some baritenors, and some tenors, right? We do that by voice type. Then we basically put the rest of them into what we call the waitlist offer, which says, we are not able to make you an offer right now, but we feel you're an admittable. There's a lot of people that we just say, nope, no thanks. But to the waitlist folks, we say, would you be interested in staying on the waitlist? And they say, nope, all set, and they're done. Or they say, yeah, I sure would. In which case we say to them, please pay a deposit where you've had an offer. Please know where you're going to college. If something happens between now and May 1st, or sometimes a few days after May 1st, because that's when everybody else's wait lists move, and then all of a sudden people don't come anymore, even though they've paid, we may need to get to our wait list. Mm-hmm. So essentially, we don't go one by one. If we wait until we know we're not going to make our number, let's say, on tenors, right? Mm-hmm. We look at the tenor list and we say, these are the next 4 tenors, right? If we have 2 spots to fill.
Interesting.
So we may go one by one, or we may go with a few more offers, because we know that the first person on the list will write back 3 seconds later and say, sorry, already paid at Ball State, very happy. So we know that's gonna happen. So mm-hmm. we finesse it a little bit. Also, folks on the wait list are very communicative. They are the most communicative people, much better than the people that we make offers to that, like, we never hear from them. Suddenly they say yes or no. But the wait list people tend to write to me and say, I just want you to know, mm-hmm. this is my number one choice. And if I get accepted, I will come. That helps me, because then I go, oh, well, that person's in the top 4, right? And then I look at the other two and I think, okay, I'm just going to make the one offer and see if they change. And if they do, so I don't have a rule. I'm case by case, and I have to step back and look at that. I'm not making these decisions by myself. My faculty have weighed in on all those students when we made first offers. So mm-hmm. I know where everybody is. We do not say to you, Tim, you're number 10. Mm-hmm. We don't do that. Because you know what? It may be that the person that we thought was going to come that suddenly backed out, brings a certain dynamic. We may have someone else that's very similar to that we were like, oh, if we have to choose, right? It's like casting, right? If we have to choose between this person and this person. So we might go to that person first. Also, there's not a lot of bass baritones. So we may make offers to all of our bass baritones on the wait list. If we know we've only got 1 or 2 bass baritones that have paid into the class, and just say, great, if we had 4 bass baritones, what would be wrong with that, right? It would be wonderful. But we can't have 18 sopranos. We can't do it. We can't choose material that serves them. We've done Sister Act. You know, we did it last year. We had a lot of great sopranos and mezzos, and we needed to cast, we needed something that had great roles for women and also great roles for men. So, we have to look at this as a 3-4 year operation. you know, that we want to make sure that we're not accepting students that we can't fully serve.
Great. Great. So to wrap up today, tell us what the fall looks like at Ithaca, as far as anything exciting coming down at the program. Are you in person? What's fall going to be like?
We are in person. I mean, everyone is hoping for that. I think that the vaccines are looking up. There is a requirement for vaccinations for students and faculty and staff that wish to be on campus. There is not a remote option for studio courses like there was this semester, where we had a couple students in Canada that said, my parents just don't want me to be so far away. So they're studying remotely. We're partnering them. We're, you know, they're dealing with the ways that we worked in the fall, right, which was all remote in the fall. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to be able to have that flexibility, because the work we need to do in the studio is important to be done in the studio. So we have to sort of call that shot at this point and say that's the line for now, is that we will be in person. That doesn't mean that there won't be remote classes. The big lecture classes like Psych of Adjustment or Psych 101 or, you know, theater history, those might remain remote, because it's just so much easier to do that than to have 85 people in a lecture hall, which may not be possible. Mm-hmm. So it might be that there's an AB schedule, or that they say, you know what, the big lecture hall classes are just going to be remote, and we're going to use those lecture halls for the 25-person classes like Drama Lit, and everybody will be a little more spread out. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what we're doing now. I teach theater, intro to theater. I've got 9 students remote. I've got 20 in the room. But I'm in a huge room, which I would never be in with 32 students. So studio classes are back on. Production is back on. We did productions this semester. We did 2 performances. They were recorded with limited audience, because we are in New York State, so we could only have 15 people in the room. We didn't even call them audiences. We called them observers to the recording sessions. But the students were able to achieve the outcomes of doing productions, stage managers, crew, everything, because they're doing more than one performance. But it's recorded and then edited and then shared as a live stream of the recording of the production. And then we all get to watch that stream. So we did Head Over Heels, we did Trojan Women, we're doing Stop Kiss, Proof, She Loves Me, and the opera Magic Flute. So those are all happening through that mode this year, which is amazing, because we have a great local partner, obviously alums of IC, that are recording those. So we might still use them next year. We use them for our showcase as well. And of course, our virtual showcase looks incredible. And there's no reason to go back, right? There's great. No reason to say, and now singing in a theater in New York that holds 25 people and it's full of agents 6 feet away, not going to happen. Like, no agent is going to put themselves at risk for that. That's no. Just, we're not going back. We're not snapping back to the way things were. No. We're going to make sure that we're able to give the industry the view of what they need, rather than a compromised mm-hmm. sense of what they need. And also the access is incredible. You know, all the agents and casting directors in LA, Atlanta, Vegas, right. Chicago can all see the showcase now. So it's going to change the way we work. And I think that's an exciting thing for the future.
I agree. That's wonderful. Well, Catherine, it's been so great to talk to you today. I knew so much about your program, but I learned so much more today. So I'm so grateful to have you on the podcast today.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to kind of show what's under the hood. I think there's so much on College Confidential, and, you know, Hallie from ArtsBridge and, you know, Denise will email me and say, okay, so there's a rumor that this is happening. And it's like, what?
The rumors.
Like, what? I know. So, you know, that's when I say it's like social media. It's like seventh grade all over again. Thank mm-hmm. you. I don't want to do seventh grade all over again. So we just need to be more mindful and bring positive intent to the work that we do, as we all face the important challenges and changes that we need to make. So I'm grateful that you give us the platform and the opportunity to talk about who we are and what we do.
Yeah. So if anyone has any more questions about the program, how can they reach out and speak to someone?
So the easiest is to email theaterarts, theatre, theaterarts, at ithaca.edu. Go to our website, which is ithaca, you know, .edu/theater. And there are videos there. Go to About Us. There's a great video there from the fall of 2018 from our ragtime and dance concert and other productions. And you get to see kind of who we are, but also all of the information about the curriculum is really easy to access mm-hmm. through our website, through academic information or our programs. So go to the website and email us at theaterarts@ithaca.edu.
Wonderful. Well, Catherine, I hope that I can see you again in person real soon and have you down for some workshops and things here in Florida. And always a pleasure to chat with you.
Take care. Thanks for doing the great work you're doing.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye. For more information on the exciting training, workshops, and masterclasses offered by The College Audition, please visit us online at www.thecollegeaudition.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok.